Golf Weekly
from Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Off the Ball Open in Abu Dhabi this November. Book your place now at offtheball.com/open.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Andrew, welcome along. Golf Weekly with you. It's been a while, but we're back. Nathan Murphy in studio alongside me. Hello.
We fairly celebrated Shane Lowry, didn't we?
Few people have made that point. John Campbell, I know you guys do this voluntarily, but any pod this week, I missed you on my commute in Bangkok this morning. Or are you still celebrating Shane's win? Nathan Murphy has not been sober in 24 days and counting.
That was even before he won the Open.
Fionn Davenport, you're back in Manchester.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Very well, very well, very well. So I'll start with tweets. There's lots going on. Poor old Bryson DeChambeau is having a difficult time. Brian Horgan has been in touch. He says, the PGA Tour make it too easy for Brooks Koepka to play the chip on the shoulder card. And then he has a screen grab of a PGA Tour profile looking ahead to the FedEx Series, and they describe Brooks Koepka as 3-time major winner. Brooks Koepka.
He's won more than that?
Yeah. Simon Murdoch, lads, just sharing today's track, Laguna Course, Villamora on the Algarve, across the road from Victoria, where they host the Portuguese Masters. Not a bad Tuesday morning. He shot a glorious 5-over-41 on the back
nine. Nice. Lovely. They're gorgeous. The Old Course, the Villamora Old Course, and the Victoria are both superb.
Mm. Enda Campbell sent us one of those pictures where you get to see their legs and their feet on the beach. Surely the best way to spend a Saturday on Ios Island, IOS, Fionn?
Eos.
Where is that again?
Yeah.
Greece.
He was half expecting a longer debate on the best Irish golfing performance ever. It was a 2-hour podcast.
Yeah.
it is a debate we could have sometime, some quiet week, and we get Peter Lawrie in and we get some people who are well able to judge this.
Yeah.
I'm always wary, like even obviously thinking Lawrie on Saturday is right up there alongside Harrington at Birkdale and Rory at Congressional. There is probably, and there is, 50, 70 years of golf, and people, a Dermot Gleeson would be able to pick out, well,
best.
If you remember this day, Joe Carr probably did something spectacular back in the day.
Sure he did. Jeff Tucker's in touch to say, our last pod, which was, unfortunately, we're sorry to say, 2 weeks ago after the Larry win. Great pod, fascinating discussion on Rory, super interview at Manship. It should definitely be 2 hours every week. If anything, you'll get paid twice as much.
Yep.
We just got a lot of love, actually, this week on the old tweet machine from the last podcast.
Mm. We're the anti-Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah. Derek Henry piled in as well to say, brilliant pod, insightful and considered, really captured the magnitude of the event. Great interviews with Shane Lowry and Neil Manship. Sunday, one of the best sporting events I ever attended. Oisin McAvennie, fantastic lads. One of the best pods you've done.
Wow.
Interesting.
More is more.
Martin McHugh, class. 2 hours of golf chat should be a weekly thing. That's my weekend house cleaning podcast. And then Anthony O'Connell, pod catch-up time. He was basking in the Lowry magic in Sardinia. Send us a more novel holiday photo. Him in the swimming pool.
Actually in the swimming pool.
Oh, yeah.
With his headphones on.
He had the new iBuds.
And what if they go in the water?
Well, I'd say he's goose then. They don't seem to fall out of your ears, those things.
No?
No.
Don't seem to.
No.
It's not like the wire's keeping it in place when you think about it.
No. In fact, the wire's just dragging it down.
Yeah. Good talk. And then...
2 hours of this is what they're looking for.
More bants.
And then Nathan went all in on the... would you rather debate we had on the last podcast by putting up a poll on Twitter. So he asked on Golf Weekly OTB, would you rather a Rory McIlroy iron off the first tee, A, smash your phone to bits, or B, smash into your neck?
So this obviously is from our 2-hour podcast where I think myself and Fionn were both on the same side where we would take the damage to the phone because obviously... No, you're going for
no,
the neck.
No. I'm 100% with Joe.
What? Yeah.
Save the phone.
This is
save
the most nonsensical the thing I've ever heard.
Well,
I'm going to put this out there with no evidence, but everyone who polled and said that they would rather sacrifice their phone is a damn liar.
and have rubbish phones.
I think we need to do further investigation into what people are getting when they get hit by a ball.
Glove. I still think it's just a glove.
So Mickelson was the glove and the $100 inside the glove.
Like, oh, is that right?
As far as I know, there was always $100 inside Mickelson. And possibly, well, maybe not possibly Tigers. But if you've just got smashed in the head by accepting that glove,
if you go
to court, like, is that going to be used against you that, oh, they were perfectly happy to...
I'm sure there
is... Well, one is you can't go to court because you sign a waiver.
Yeah,
you sign a waiver.
That woman who was half blinded at Le Golf National, tough luck. You took a ticket. Golf balls fly through the air.
Legally, she had no grounding.
Exactly, yeah. Mm.
When you buy a ticket, you're accepting the terms and conditions.
No, but when you go into a bouncy castle place, you accept the terms and conditions, yet they're all shutting down because they're getting sued every second week.
No, but no, hang on a second. The issue with the suing in the bouncy castle is to do with a fault with the bouncy castles or a perceived fault. Like, getting hit by a golf ball is not a fault. I mean, it's just, as Joe said, that's just the terms and conditions. When you enter onto a golf course, you assume the risk that you have to pay attention for golf balls.
But if you're at the Ryder Cup, Fionn, would you not be able to put up a defence of there's 24 of the world's very best players that you can attend that tournament on the assumption that they're going to hit the ball straight?
No, it doesn't work like that. The argument would be that where the fans are positioned is considered a safe enough distance from the play, but with the proviso that balls go offline. So, for example, if the people in the green or the high vis jackets was to usher people into the middle of the fairway and say, "Here, stand here," and you got belted by a golf ball, then you might have an argument. But no, you don't. Now,
where are these terms and conditions?
In the ticket, when you buy a ticket.
But where can I then look further to see where the terms and conditions actually are? Are they on the European Tour website?
Probably.
But my point is this.
See, you've got it probably now.
Didn't Koepka offer to pay hospital care for...
I bloody hope so. And you know what? Yeah. He can throw another million on top of that while he's at it. Like,
yeah,
that'd be the minimum. He should dedicate his year's earnings to the woman.
I think that's part of the argument is that
Matt Kuchar went up to him and said, "Listen, you're not..."
Dude, terms and conditions. Yeah. Terms and conditions. Look at the ticket. I'm well up in the terms and conditions. Don't you worry.
I'll tell you what. You damaged my golf ball, so I'll tell you what.
It's a Pro V.
We'll say five or even. It's a Pro VX. Yeah, exactly.
That poor woman, I often think of her. Pop into my head when I'm watching Koepka play golf.
Every time I tee off and there's somebody else around.
Mm. It's just so dreadful when you think about it. The results are in. 80% of people would choose to have their phone smashed to bits. 20% would take the ball into the neck.
I mean, it all depends. Like, I don't want a ball firing in and giving me cranial damage.
Oh, well, you don't get a choice, though.
It's into your neck.
It's hitting you in the neck. You just got to take what happens.
Your odds are good, Fionn.
And listen, terms and conditions, you signed up for it, Fionn, so tough. Don't come to me complaining.
Yeah.
It's true.
Before we get into Pearl, Bryson DeChambeau and a few other bits and pieces, Women's British Open, Northern Trust is on this week, Tiger Woods back at Medina, all the memories. The Off the Ball Open. It's nearing a pinch point here if people want to get their asses over to Abu Dhabi, Nathan.
17th, 23rd of November, the inaugural Off the Ball Open. We've been talking about this for the last few months. But yeah, it is getting that time that you need to get your deposits in. We have a lot of people signed up already. We have a lot of people saying, yeah, I'm definitely going. Yeah, I'll do that very Irish thing. You know, book it in October. You need to get your deposit in, which is £250 for the deposit. It is 5-day trip, return flights with Etihad Airways. I haven't been to Abu Dhabi, unfortunately, with Etihad Airways. I could have had that opportunity a few years ago, but Fionn, who's a travel writer who literally spends his life on an airplane, stole my prize off me in Crow Park. So he got to go to Abu Dhabi again on Etihad Airways for free. And Louise, who's our marketing manager, who was working for Etihad that night and remembers it well, said, yeah, we were really annoyed that Fionn won that instead of you winning it, because Fionn could literally have a flight for free with Etihad whenever he wanted, but chose to take that one anyways, away from poor little me. Mm. So I'm really looking forward to going to Abu Dhabi with Etihad Airways and just checking it out.
Story doesn't reflect brilliantly on you, Fionn.
No, it's not.
It doesn't. I mean, in fact, my greatest shame is that I answered the majority of questions about Gaelic sports correctly. And Nathan, a proud Mayo man, and I presume a true Gael and son of Mayo
true
football,
Gael.
You lost. So,
and Fiona doesn't care about GAA.
I'm. Hey, hey, hey. As a true dub, I can just say, I am. I'm a true dub. I'm from Blanchardstown. My nearest club is Bridget's.
You wouldn't know.
Maybe one player from Bridget's.
One player in the history.
The best player.
One player in the history of Bridget's.
Me. I played Bridget's under 8s, under 9s, under 10s, and, yeah, under 11s and under 12s. I played for Bridget's. I did. Yeah. Proud son of North County Dublin.
What was the last Dublin match you attended?
Oh, there's corporate boxes all over the place for a travel writer.
No,
that wasn't a corporate box.
No, it was. No, here. Honestly, the last Dublin match I attended was the All-Ireland Final 1983, Dublin Galway.
You haven't exactly proven your credentials there.
No. I have no credentials. I'm spoofing. I'm absolutely spoofing. And the weird thing was about that competition, it was like a multiple choice, the decider question between me and Nathan. And I just like, it was like closing my eyes and throwing a dart at the board. I just guessed one and it was right. In fairness, the look of disgust on Nathan's face. But in fairness to Nathan, Joe, it was one of those how many people questions arrange where the question could be between 70 and 80,000, 90 and 100,000. It was one of those. It wasn't necessarily built in Gaelic lore. But anyway, I got it right and that's how I won the prizes.
So you have played the National and Jazz Links? Okay.
Yeah, twice. I went on two successive trips. I'll say Jazz Links is one of the best courses I've ever played. For one of these kind of manufactured courses, like built into, you know, obviously it's
desert.
Built into the desert. But it's an unbelievable course. What's your man's name? Kyle Phillips was the guy who designed it. And the thing about it is that it's a, so off the tee, it's pretty generous. 8 of the holes are on the water. So you've got these spectacular views. You can play bump and runs a la links. The greens are fabulous. Everything about it is really, really satisfying. Abu Dhabi National, which is the other golf course, which is the more famous golf course because it's got the big falcon shaped clubhouse.
Yeah.
That's a grand resort course. It's good. Like there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. The 9th and 18th both finish up. You kind of play into that hole. But Yas Links is special. It really is. It's just an unbelievably beautiful course. I'd have two criticisms is that whereas with links, you often, when you play a links, you feel like you're kind of away from everything, you know, like, because you're kind of lost in the Marram Dunes and all the rest. With Yaz, like there's all, like on the back nine, it's kind of lined with hotels. And then you're playing into Ferrari world. So in the distance, I mean, you can see this massive thing, which is the Ferrari World theme park. And that's there. So you don't get that sense of I'm kind of away from everything. But on the golf course itself is absolutely spectacular. And I mean, National is a great course. But if I had a choice of playing one or the other, I would play Yas Links.
Well, you don't have to choose, Fionn, which is the advantage to this when you're there in November. Shane Lowry won on the National?
Yes.
Here he is talking to Owen Sheehan about the course.
Just a final point. We've mentioned Abu Dhabi there. We're actually off to Abu Dhabi with Off the Ball for an Off the Ball Open at the National later on this year. For people who are interested in going, what's the course like? I presume, from your perspective, it's pretty beautiful.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite places in the world. But it's an amazing place. You know, the clubhouse is obviously very famous, but the golf course is great, and you know, the weather is beautiful over there. So it's a lovely place to go and play golf. It's a nice place, yeah.
In terms of the toughest courses you've played on the European Tour, where does it rank?
Yeah, the fairways are very hard to hit. It's a weird course like that. You kind of hitting across the fairways a lot. Obviously, the scoring is always quite good there. It's not really one of the tougher ones, but it is one of the nicer venues that we play.
So obviously, as well as playing the National and the Yas, there's the Peter Lowry Golf Clinic.
Approach with caution.
So time will be spent.
Can
in
I point
advance.
Out? Just point out one of the nice things about National is as well the par 3 12th is this, I guess, the signature hole or one of. It's the one where you have the wall at the par 3 over water, wall at the back, and then bunkers on either side. And then the 18th. The 18th's a great hole. So it's a par 5. But depending on where the pin is placed, it could be up to 4 clubs in the difference between the front of the green and the back. And It really is. So it's like there's an awful lot of variation on what is effectively just a nice resort course. But it was interesting to hear Shane say that you're hitting across fairways. I would imagine that's far more the case if you're hitting off the tips rather than, say, off the middle tees, which I presume give you a slightly better angle into fairways and is much more challenging for the pros. But no, anyway, there. That's the only point I had to make.
So,
Cassidy Travel.
They were interested.
.ie. I'm sure people have been hearing the ads on News Talk and elsewhere. Flights from Dublin.
Voiced by JP Gilman.
I know. Whoa, I was listening to that silky smooth voice thinking, Richie McCormack could be in trouble here for voiceover work. So 17th, 23rd of November, flights from Dublin, 5 nights in a 4-star hotel. You play the 2 courses, gala awards dinner, Peter Lorre Golf Clinic, live off the ball roadshow. We'll be broadcasting live from Yas Island each day. A trip to Ferrari World is on the cards. Have you been to Ferrari World, Fionn?
I have.
What's the crack with that? Do you get to drive a Formula One car?
No, but you get to drive a simulator that is as close to driving a Formula One car as you get. Now, bear in mind, so Yas Island, so there are two or three maybe, but there are Yas is one artificial island and then there's Saadiyat Island. But Yas is where Lynx is. There's a whole bunch of hotels and restaurants. It's where Ferrari World and the racetrack is. So it's a kind of a self-contained pleasure bubble. And Ferrari World, I mean, I'm not a big car aficionado, and I love Ferrari World. It's just brilliant. Roller coasters and adrenaline. It's great if you like adrenaline. One of the things that we did when I was there the last time, which in fairness now is a couple of years ago, on a Wednesday night, I think, or one of the nights on the actual racetrack where they do the Grand Prix, for like $100, you can drive like a stock car around the racetrack. Or maybe it's a little more, but it's amazing. You're driving the racetrack, the actual
against
racetrack.
Against other people?
No, that's no. Sheikh Zayed Road, though, the one between Abu Dhabi and Dubai, is a straight road. It's only about, ever, like 60 kilometers between the two. And if you go on it, you'll see like an unbelievable collection of hyper expensive supercars, like everything from Lamborghinis to Maseratis to McLarens, like just being like zipped all along by young men who aren't necessarily the greatest drivers in the world.
Have you ever been to a Formula One race?
No. I had no great interest, I don't think.
No, I went to the Australian Grand Prix, and it's definitely a sport, unless you're on a jolly, unless you're in the
corporate section.
In the corporate section, or along the pit wall, it's an absolute waste of time.
It's funny, we took my mother to Monza for the Italian Grand Prix for her 60th birthday, and she loved it. But what she loved more than anything was the noise of the cars. I presume, Nathan, the noise, no matter where you were, it was fairly loud.
Oh, yeah, it was incredibly loud. That's the most surprising part of it.
That doesn't sound very appealing to me.
No, the least appealing fact is that, so I remember we got there, so the race starts at, 1 o'clock local time? We got there about 7 a.m. in the morning to get a decent spot at the first corner. Nothing happened in the first corner. And nothing happened for the entire rest of the race at the first corner. At one stage, we saw a car spin off, but it was all happening so fast, we literally couldn't tell what had happened. This was before Twitter, before any of this. So you're sitting there pretty much, unless you're beside a big screen, totally oblivious to everything that's happening.
Yeah.
It's like watching a golf tournament then.
Yeah. Is this a golf podcast or what? Can we get on with things?
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, so offtheball.com/open is where those interested can get on board.
CassidyTravel.ie.
Okay, perfect. Now we got to talk about Bryson. So Bryson DeChambeau.
Bryson DeChambeau.
Very
boom.
Good.
Just saw that there. Like, I can't believe no one's gone with that. Have people gone with that?
No. I haven't seen that anywhere.
I need to get that out there.
Well, you've just renamed the pod for today.
Yeah. Don't be taking credit for that.
Well, listen, it was a team effort. I think we came up with it together.
Yeah.
So DeChambeau.
I mean,
there has not been a pylon like this in golf, maybe ever. DeChambeau, I think everybody's familiar with the story at this stage, so I won't labour the point. He took over 2 minutes, I think it was 2 minutes and 20-odd seconds, to hit an 8-foot putt. And the video went viral, literally millions of views. Then another video emerged of him pacing out a 70-yard approach shot. It's just been... It got to the point where I started feeling sorry for him. Eddie Pepperell at one point called him a twit. The problem is this unaffected, single-minded twit doesn't care much for others. Now, Pepperell has since apologised for that, saying, I shouldn't have called him a twit, it was unnecessary. But Luke Donald's got involved. Like, Luke Donald, Justin Rose, Lee Westwood, several other Americans, all weighing in. Like, Justin Rose, whose social media profile isn't...
I'll stop you right there.
...the most vicious.
I'll stop you right there, because I also nearly made the mistake you're about to make. Mm-hmm. So this blew up because of the video on Justin Rose's Twitter page.
Well, he said, just put it already.
That's not that Justin Rose.
Ah.
It's a different Justin Rose.
That's unfortunate.
Because I saw this on Saturday night, late. And my first reaction was, and I do, and we get into, I do have sympathy now with Bryson DeChambeau some for the way it's gone, was, piss off Justin Rose. Like, really?
So Justin Rose hasn't had a go at him?
No, this is, it's a different Justin Rose. It's an American TV broadcaster.
Because he did write, put it already. And I thought, it's not very an English sounding thing. Maybe just all this
time. And also,
time
like,
the
there
Bahamas.
Was no picture of him with a watch or anything. So, no watch, what was the point of it? What was the point of that tweet?
Because I saw the blue tick. So, it was a Justin
Rose. It was a Justin Rose. Not the Justin Rose.
That is very unfortunate from Bryson DeChambeau's perspective. Very unfortunate. Because that's what made me think, whoa.
Yeah.
It's a real story.
Justin Rose is really going from.
Yeah. The Tour has released a statement expanding on plans to, quote, take a deeper look at the topic, including the prospect of using ShotLink technology to get a more accurate time report on individuals, potentially handing out fines or penalties to players who are slow. The DeChambeau statement, I think this is what made it all worse, though, wasn't it? DeChambeau talking about it. Do we have a clip of that?
Yeah, we have Bryson DeChambeau.
So this is DeChambeau after, like, just, I mean, not exactly 101 in crisis management.
I play a different way out there. I take my 40 seconds that is allotted, sometimes over, absolutely. Totally agree. It's maybe 5% of the time, but I'll tell you that it's really kind of unfortunate the way it's perceived. Because there's a lot of other guys that take a lot of time. They don't talk about this matter. And for me personally, it is an attack, and it's something that is not me whatsoever. I'm trying to enjoy my time out there and play golf in the best way possible. Yet I'm sprinting in between every single shot because sometimes playing partners and caddies don't walk at the necessary speed that they need to. Because this is a four-person job when we're talking about this. If you catch me out at my normal golf course, I'll be playing in 2.5 hours. I hate playing golf. But when people start talking to me about slow play and how I'm killing the game, I'm doing this and that to the game, that is complete an utter you-know-what. That's not fair when people are putting me in a bad light, guys. I'm trying to do my absolute best. I'm trying to provide entertainment.
Did any player say anything to you to your face between last
and...
Oh,
no. Nope, not one.
So how do you read that if there are players saying things...
People say things behind people's back all the time, you know? And if they want to talk about it to my face, I'll gladly explain the whole situation.
Well, on that point, Bryson... Where the thing just got bizarre, and it's not in that clip, where he's talking about, you know, let's talk about slow play, guys. It's really unfortunate the way it's perceived. A lot of other guys take a lot of time. People don't realise the harm that they're doing. And then he goes, let me give you one example, guys. Stevie Williams. So I doubt he has said this to Stevie Williams' face. Mm. He's talking there. You know, say it to my face. Stevie Williams, I played with him at the WGC. Guess how long it took us to play that round, the third round. Does anyone know? Well, you should go and check that out. Like, at least don't make us have to go and check it out. Because we were on their tail. So Stevie Williams must have been ahead of them. We were on their tail every single hole playing with Jason Day and Stevie. A lot of it is the caddies. When people start talking to me about slow play and how I'm killing the game and I'm doing this, that is not fair. It is not fair. A lot of it is the caddies.
Like, Bryson. A lot of last weekend doesn't reflect well on Bryson. And slow play is only a part of it. Because you'd have to question his smartness in who he's looking for a scrap with. So the tweet of the weekend was undoubtedly Eamon Lynch's tweet.
Oh, yeah.
Whereby, so all this is kicking off. Eamon Lynch is standing on the putting green chatting with Ricky Elliott. And Brooks is either there or they're waiting for Brooks Koepka's arrival. And Bryson marches up to Ricky Elliott and says, tell your boss... He's got something to say.
Your boss?
Say it to my face. So obviously, a couple of minutes later, Brooks arrives over. Ricky Elliott says, Bryson said, if you have something to say, say it to his face. Bryson is standing just across the putting green. Brooks strolls straight over to say to his face. So firstly, don't take on a fight with Brooks Koepka, probably the toughest man on the PGA Tour.
On the, in the planet.
And secondly, don't take up a fight with Stevie Williams, an absolute nut job. Who's probably the toughest caddy out there.
Why did I just, when he said, let me give you one example, guys.
But also, I would have thought, actually, and this is where maybe there is some sympathy for DeChambeau, and it has turned into bullying.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy who's slightly different, which we can get into that, maybe that's part of the issue here, that he's not that different and players don't like the fact that he's managed to create this sort of caricature around himself that people find interesting. But Jason Day is always seen as an extremely slow player.
Yeah.
So Stevie Williams obviously is not the issue for Jason Day.
I wouldn't have thought so.
So why not call out Jason Day?
By the way, Stevie Williams and Jason Day have split. You may not have seen that news. Jason Day described it as a clash between old school and
brilliant.
New school.
That was the most honest thing Jason Day has ever said.
I'm presuming Stevie Williams is old school. So I don't know, what is an old school caddy versus a new school caddy?
Do you think he should get Dash to be his caddy?
Dash is getting old now. Do you think when Jason Day is doing that standing there closing his eyes thing, Stevie Williams is going, ugh.
Do you think it's that Stevie's old school in that he likes to win golf tournaments, whereas Jason just seems to be like hanging around making lots of money?
That was a very interesting comment. I didn't know there was an old school, new school divide. Like, I'm sure Stevie Williams is into things like yardages and the wind, you know. And
but maybe old school is that the caddy is very involved.
Maybe.
Whereas new school is that, like McIlroy, like Dustin Johnson, you have somebody like Phil Mickelson now, you have somebody close to you, maybe not an absolute expert caddy, but you just have a sounding board, not somebody who's going to give you their opinion.
I'll bring Fiona in. I didn't know, because you know the way some of the younger players now have a lot of like their caddies giving them the final word. Visualise the shot, or they have some sign off. Oh, and it's like a real team thing. Maybe Williams thinks that's all just a bit silly. I played with Tiger Woods. He knew what he was doing. I'm the caddy. I don't know. But anyway, Bryson DeChambeau, Fiona. Poor old Bryson. This was a major pile-on, as Nathan was kind of alluding to. It did make me think as well. A few people waiting in the long grass here for a chance to give this guy a little bit of a chastening.
Yeah, a bit Bryson DeChambeau-like.
Oh, he's trying to up it.
Interesting.
Trying to up it.
Might have to go with that one.
No, because that would infer that he was shambolic.
But the whole episode has been shambolic.
No, but it's because he's DeChambeau-slow.
No, yeah, you got the initial part, but maybe Fionn captures the whole shambolic
element.
Well,
listen, if I have to spend the rest of it, the entire pod now trying to think of somebody to outdo it, I'm going to do that.
It's of course. So the obvious one is, yeah, I mean, to take 2 minutes and 20 to read an 8-foot putt and then miss it 6 inches right, like
he missed it
at least two balls right, at least. To walk off 70-yard shots, I mean, he does that anyway. Of course it's slow play and it's ridiculous. And DeChambeau would have been better advised to adopt a Kevin Na approach and go, look, I hold my hands up. Yes, I'm working on it. I'm trying to get my process. I'm just going to read you the quote from Brandel Chamblee, who jumped to the defense of DeChambeau and said, who among us hasn't stood like a statue lining up a shot waiting for a momentary reconciliation of a psychic war being waged in our heads? Golf is a hard, thoughtful, beautiful game. It's not meant to be played fast. Tell a few stories, have a few laughs, take in the scenery. To which my only response to Brandel is that momentary reconciliation shouldn't take more than 40 seconds. And if it does take more than 40 seconds, you have bigger issues. I saw Phil Mickelson or in to do with the Greens books. And he's saying that the Greens books, unlike what people are saying, speed up play, to which Luke Donald said that's absolute nonsense. Because he says 80% of my work on the green is done before I even reach it. To which Luke Donald goes, but the green books is everything is relative to your position of the ball. So how on earth can you do all that work before you get to the green? So my point is this. There's absolutely no doubt DeChambeau is playing slow. He's not the only one. So the pylon, is it because he's a bit of a... He's also a rookie, a relative rookie. He's not an old-timer. He doesn't have a huge amount of power, so it's easy to bash him. I wonder this, if it's the illusion of doing something so that the PGA don't have to do anything. Because there's nothing new in this. Here's the thing. You want to solve slow play? Dock them a shot. Give them three warnings, dock them a shot. That's it. Just do it. And you cure slow play, in a heartbeat. And then all of a sudden, those two and a half hour rounds that DeChambeau is talking about playing will become maybe not quite the norm, but we will play golf much more closely to that kind of time.
How much difference would speeding up the game by half an hour make to any of our, you know, our lives when it comes to watching golf? Really, like how much can they speed up the game?
Could the television coverage cope with the game being speeded up?
As in, to fit in the ads and
to fit in the amount of ads and nonsense that they throw in there?
I'd say they could, because a shot takes such a little amount of time. But you might see less of the walking around and less of the drama and less of, you know, sometimes part of enjoying the golf coverage is the gaps in between shots and watching body language and all that kind of stuff. If like you've got,
see, I agree on that, and that's part of what Brandel Chamblee was saying. Like, there's extremes to this, and maybe DeChambeau's on one end and what Chamblee's saying is on the other, and it is a entertainment sport at this stage, at the professional game, that just wandering around all day doesn't really suit anybody. But on the afternoon of a major, the longer it goes on, the better.
I agree. Like, no, but the thing is about DeChambeau's video, none of us saw that 2 minutes plus on TV.
No.
No, you saw it on Twitter.
Yeah, so it's actually kind of an irrelevance to the TV audience.
But Tommy Fleetwood was making that point, that players are so aware of cameras and their position within a tournament that they have a very good idea as to whether they're on camera or not. And he was suggesting that if DeChambeau was being videoed, if he knew that this shot was going to be broadcast to millions of people, he wouldn't have acted like that. Mm-hmm. That he was kind of just taking the piss because he knew he could get away with it.
Right. I've also heard somebody say that the group ahead of him were still on the tee. As in, is there a value in, when everybody is slow, and I guess the real issue for players is probably when you've got one fast with two slow. That must just be head-wrecking for a player. A lot of sympathy there. But if it was true, and I don't know if it is true, because how could I? But it seems that someone was saying, well, the group in front of DeChambeau were on the tee. So say he has a tricky putt at a tricky point in the tournament, and he's looking at the net over the next tee box, and the lads are still there. Is he not entitled to say, well, everyone else has put it out, I'm going to take my 2 minutes here because this is, I'm not going to, no benefit to anyone to
we all do
standing
that
on the tee.
We all do that when we're playing around. If you're on the green and the group in front of you are sitting up on the tee, you have a bit more of a chat. You're certainly not rushing around.
Yeah, the reaction of the other players probably suggests he's doing this quite a bit. Mm. So, that's, or else they just don't like him personally. But that's how I interpreted the reaction of the other players.
So, every point you've just made was what I was building up to, is that this idea that somehow, I mean, there's a lot made about Justin Thomas's look to camera on the video that you look at. And, like, I don't know, can you read into it?
He had just missed a putt. That's what that was about.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly.
Because at the start of the 2 minutes.
And so here's Tommy Fleetwood is standing waiting patiently. Tommy Fleetwood's one of the slightly quicker players. He's waiting patiently for the thing to happen. But you're just to emphasize the point that you're both making, as a TV sport, who cares? They chop and change from one player to another all the time. Mm. You don't have to see this. So the idea of the TV producers, their job is to, they have whatever it is, their feed of a dozen cameras, keep cutting from one hole to another and show the action. And if you need to show a little bit of drama, then show a little bit of drama. Ooh, this crazy putt that's so hard to read. So, I mean, the idea of a pile-on on DeChambeau, I feel sorry for him as well. I know it doesn't make for great radio when everybody agrees with each other, but I do agree that, like, in the end, I don't like any of that garbage that he does, all that number stuff. For me personally, I just find it just like, ugh, just play golf, will you? Stop. You don't need to know 50 million numbers, or maybe he does. But for me, I'm just like, I don't find any of that interesting. But it doesn't mean that I think he should be piled on, or that somehow he has to carry the can for slow play, or he is somehow the worst person in golf simply because he got a Twitter pile-on. But the PGA, I think it suits the drama of talking about it because, as I said, it gives the illusion of doing something. The PGA aren't going to look into it. If they wanted to, they just tack him a shot and then it'd be over in a heartbeat. But they won't do it, so, and life goes on.
Yeah, I must say, I know, look, we give out about slow play. It doesn't bother me that much watching TV. If the TV coverage is good and if they have...
Exactly.
enough players factored in on rotation, then it works fairly seamlessly. Where it bothers me is when I'm playing on a Saturday and you're watching people imitate the pros, like, ugh, just going on forever, and they don't have a consistent pre-shot routine. They just have like a borrowed different pre-shot routine for any different situation. You know, you could sort of live with a guy if he did the same thing every time, but it's not even that. It's just like slow, or it's the JB Holmes thing of not having your glove ready, or, you know, they've got to put for triple bogey and it's been looked at 10 different ways. And actually, you want to go up and say, look, the problem is not your speed of play here with that putt, it's actually your putting stroke. You know, that kind of stuff would bother you. But I don't often remember being in front of the TV going, oh, hurry up, this is taking too long, because you're kind of doing other things, and it's a bit like watching test match cricket in some ways. There's an element,
you've got to commit yourself to it.
Yeah, and there's an element of it being like, you can multitask a little bit. It's there and you're keeping an eye on certain people, and if Rory comes on the screen, you suddenly tune in a little bit more, and less so for other players. I mean, maybe a bunch of people will tweet us and say slow play ruins their enjoyment of the TV experience.
Well, it's Sunday night, they tee off at 7 o'clock. They should be finished at 11 o'clock. They're not finished till 12 o'clock.
That's kind of annoying for sure. But yeah. I don't know, does 20 minutes make a difference to the actual enjoyment of the experience of watching it? Sure, it'd be nice to be done an hour earlier from, you know, get to bed earlier or whatever, but that's not really their concern. That's to do with time difference.
Well, how much are they going to speed it up is one of the things.
That's my question.
Because, so, the PGA Tour say they're going to take a deeper look into this topic, and they're going to use ShotLink technology to get more accurate time reports. But what was released this week was that the Tour knows, thanks to ShotLink, that it takes 38 seconds to hit an average shot. Now, the time they're meant to be allotted is 40 seconds. So if the average is 38 seconds, the vast majority of players are well over the 40 seconds. So what's the answer? Increase it to a minute? Like, you can't reduce it. If already they can't get anywhere near 40 seconds. They're saying 51 seconds for shots around the green, that actually it goes up on the weekend when players are paired in twosomes compared to when they're played in threesomes. You would assume that that's because there's more pressure at the weekends and you're thinking about it probably a little bit more deeply. But I'm just wondering, like, what radical, unless they're to do something absolutely radical, which off the top of my head I can't think what that is, so I can bring in carts or something to get them around the place quicker.
That is, if you want to speed up golf dramatically, then you bring in carts. That is the answer. 1,000% that is the answer. The reason I think two take longer than three per shot is you've more time to think about your shot while the other two people are hitting, so
you should be more ready.
More ready. That'd be my reading of that, and the pressure. But honestly, if DeChambeau hit that putt in 25 seconds, how many seconds have we saved? 18?
Half an hour?
Tops, like.
But if every player's doing that, that's an hour and a half.
But if every player's doing that, do they not all just keep pace with each other? Like, I think that's it. That is it. Honestly, if it's killing the game, if it's not that big an issue from a TV point of view, you hook up the carts with some deadly cameras and you go. And I don't want that because I like watching body language down the fairway. I don't know.
But I don't think the problem is in the pro game. I think the problem is, Joe, as you pointed out, it's in the amateur game.
Yeah.
I think it's in the 5.5 hour Saturday comp three ball, or whatever, 5 hour three ball. That's just mental.
Would you not say, though, that the example has been set by the pro game?
Yes, sorry, that's exactly. So you have, like, a lot of people who think, oh, I should, in order to improve my putting, I don't need to improve my stroke or anything like that. What I need to do is I really need to read the greens like a pro, or I need to, a couple of things. It's like you hit a provisional if you don't know where you might find it, so you don't spend ages looking for the ball. Don't leave the golf bag on the wrong side of the hole. Just have a look at the putt. You can have a look at it two ways, but don't agonize over it. Hit the putt. These are the things that speed up play. I know that there's a tendency now in some golf clubs or amongst some groups to go, listen, lads, we'll agree on the first. We're going to play ready golf.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I'm a huge fan of. I get it.
It's become a local rule in a lot of golf clubs now.
Yeah,
ready
just
golf.
Play ready golf. But that's the issue. It's the how much of my Saturday can I commit if I've got family and other responsibilities. In the pro ranks, not to over-egg the custard, in the pro ranks, I just don't see that it's the big problem that this week is saying it is.
Yeah, I don't know. Interestingly, Dermot Calise would have made the point as well before that one of the things that has massively slowed down the game is the speed of greens. So back in the day when they were like 7 or 8 or 9 on a stint meter, and I don't want to go back to those days either, but you just bang a putt, goes 2 or 3 feet by, and you just tap it in without thinking. Whereas now you've got these slidey little 5-6 footers that take a lot of attention.
Which is why Bryson DeChambeau still didn't get within 6 inches of the hole.
Yeah, it wasn't an easy putt, clearly.
Also, his group were within 5% of the allotted time for the round.
Yeah, that generally he's not put on the clock.
Yeah. The only sympathy I do have is for a player who is a fast player and then, or an average player, and is then put on the clock as part of a group and feels that pressure. Because it's never nice, even as an amateur, when people are up your ass.
Like, that's right.
Brooks Koepka, I mean, still had the greatest solution of all time when he was on a chat show and he was asked about slow play, and he said, "Oh, well, when I'm with players I know are slow, I go to the toilet, the port-a-loo, sit there for a couple of minutes, make sure we're then putting the clock, and then the other guys have to play at my pace." Which is just genius.
That is brilliant.
On Instagram, by the way, Bryson's had a change of heart.
Oh, yeah?
He has.
"I will do my very best to improve. Slow play affects the quality of the game for both players and our fans." Loves the fans. "I've always had the utmost respect for my playing partners, including JT and Tommy. I'm constantly trying to improve." Oh, it doesn't end here. "I'm constantly trying to improve. I'll do my very best to improve my pace. Golf is my passion and my livelihood. Pace of play has been an issue for golf at all levels for a long time. I'm committed to being part of the solution, not the problem. I want to be a good representative of the tour game, and at PGA Tour, I'm looking forward to working with the tour and fellow players to find a solution." He luckily didn't include the "Hey Bryson, please" post on social as part of that release.
But God, I hate corporate America. Dear God, it's a load of nonsense.
Yeah,
that statement came from the Matt Kuchar PR firm. It has all the hallmarks of, oh shit, we've made a situation a lot worse. How do we fix this? This is the statement you put out. And all cynicism aside, it's the right thing to do by DeChambeau.
But it's not what he thinks, because what he thinks is what he said in the press conference afterwards.
Stevie Williams.
Funnily enough, Patrick Reed won the tournament last week.
We'll move on to that.
And, brilliantly.
Well, I kind of feel similarly towards DeChambeau this week, like I did with Patrick Reed around the time of the Masters.
Oh.
Just in that everybody seems to dislike DeChambeau.
Do you?
No.
Never overly, but other players. So, as you say, like, everybody has hopped on this.
Yeah.
Players like Luke Donald, who rarely express an opinion on anything, are very much in on Bryson DeChambeau.
The broadcaster Justin Rose.
Justin Rose has slaughtered him. He's the one who brought it to everybody's attention.
Lee Westwood did.
So, a lot of people, Brooks Koepka obviously as well, very much in there. But much like Patrick Reed, you're wondering, so many people have said it, you have to feel, all right, there must be something in it. There must be a reason why people dislike him.
Yeah.
But is it simply that in the world of golf, the most vanilla sport in the world, he's slightly different and they're jealous of him being slightly different?
He's cornered an area.
It's a different thing, obviously, to Patrick Reed, because the reason for disliking Patrick Reed might be things he's done in the past. But that a lot of these golfers surely are looking at DeChambeau going, this guy's the exact same as us. He's just somehow created some sort of a personality around himself. That's totally not true.
Yeah.
We're not buying any of this scientific nonsense. Mm. Screw him.
Yeah,
let's take him down a peg or two.
Well, it certainly suggests he's not popular.
Mm.
For whatever reason. Yeah, there's got to be something. Will we move off DeChambeau?
Do.
Medina this week. Medina, third longest course Medina on tour. So a big hitter is going to win here. This is the penultimate round of the FedEx series, which I know thrills everybody. So
I was excited about it in January.
Yeah. I couldn't get into the Northern Trust last week, as won by Patrick Reed. We should mention 16 under par, 268 Northern Trust in Jersey City. Nice shots at the city. So he was a shot clear of Abraham Anser. McIlroy secured his 13th top 10 finish by winning, by the way. This is one of the silly things about the FedEx, in that the rest of the season doesn't really matter, in that Reed was 50th, and because he won this tournament, he's up to second. So it's just, as much as they try and say it's a season-long thing, it really isn't. And this is going to culminate at Atlanta, with the leader being on 10 under all the way back to level par. It's kind of a different way of doing it, I guess. At least it's more accessible. You know what the score is on the first tee.
Is it? I think this may backfire somewhat.
Go on.
Well, I saw the point raised. What if Tiger Woods goes out and, by all accounts, is going to be in okay condition this week? What if he goes out, wins this week? Or, sorry, doesn't win this week, say, but next week he goes and shoots 64, 64, 64, 64. But Patrick Reed shoots 65, 65, 65, 65 and beats him. Mm. So Tiger Woods doesn't match Sam Snead's record despite shooting the lowest score over all 4 days.
But is it not? Will it not be then a similar scenario to last year where Woods won the tournament and Justin Rose won the FedEx?
Is it?
I mean, it should be. Will it not be that Woods wins the tournament when it, with all things being
so we're going to have two separate scoreboards?
Maybe they can't do that, can they?
Is it not that the winner of the Tour Championship now wins everything? Obviously, should have done some research on this before we came in to talk about
it. We'll have to check. That's an interesting one. I would... Oof. Two leaderboards is messy, though. But I did like last year where Woods won the tournament and Rose won the FedEx. But I guess you don't... That was only because it was Woods. Anyone else winning and somebody else winning the FedEx, nobody knows who won the tournament. Like, I don't know when Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy... Maybe McIlroy won in Atlanta. I don't know, but I don't know who won the tournament as opposed to the FedEx. I know Spieth has won the FedEx and McIlroy and Kuchar and these boys. I don't know who won the tournament in Atlanta those years. You know, it seems like you can finish second or third and, like,
still
Johnny Nobody wins it, but he's not part of the FedEx conversation.
I just think having staggered scores to start the tournament, just, it's not golf.
It's like a handicap system.
Also, not something built on the entire season. That so much stock is placed on
these
two tournaments building up to the Tour Championship, worth far more than all the majors. Somehow trying to give the FedEx Cup a gravitas that's really not there.
Yeah.
So, lads, I'm just reading it here, okay?
Facts, Fionn, that's what you're all about.
Oh, you know me. So, with the best score after the stroke adjustment, so that's what you were saying about the guy number one starts at 10 under and so on down. The individual with the best score after the stroke adjustment, not merely the best 72-hole score, will be the winner of the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup. And then the question is, so there won't be separate winners of the Tour Championship? And he goes, nope, that's why the change was made, to help eliminate the confusion of somebody winning the tournament at Eastlake but not being the actual FedEx Cup champion. In fact, there is no longer a separate purse for the Tour Championship.
Yeah, okay.
That's a load of nonsense. So if, and in golf, people have weeks where everything goes right, if you're unfortunate enough that in one of the biggest tournaments of the year, that's your week where you play unbelievable golf, you play it better than everybody else, you still may not win the tournament.
By the Sunday, will we all just have forgotten where everybody started on Thursday anyway? You know the way sometimes someone gets off to a
brilliant
start?
What does it mean mentally for Rory?
I don't know. Does he want
He's already started an 8 under par.
Yeah.
Where does he go from there?
Well, I mean, judging by his Portrush effort, he'd be back to 4 under pretty quick.
Oh!
That's stinging. That's unfair.
That was cutting.
But that's unfair.
Wow.
I don't know. I mean, look, it's novel. I think just imagine on a Thursday that someone shot an 8 under round and someone else shot 2 over. That could be your Thursday. Come Sunday, you sort of forget that. You know, just will you be worried on a Sunday? I think you'll just take the day on its merits that someone is 2 shots clear of somebody.
I'm sure I will.
Yeah.
But what if it's Tiger?
See, we can, you know, good bad case law is built around exceptional circumstances.
That's Look at you.
Did a little bit of that. So Tiger Woods is an exceptional circumstance. In the main, you're not going to be worried if Bill Haas has shot a slightly better round than the ultimate winner. You're not.
Yeah.
You're just not.
What if Jordan Spieth does it?
Again, we'll put him into the exceptional...
How many exceptions do we have?
Well, for you, I would think it's Spieth, Tiger, Koepka, Rory.
But
after that, you're not that bothered.
Shane Lowry,
I suppose. But you know what I mean? If Bill Haas has shot 4 rounds of 64 and Reed wins with 4 rounds of 65, you're not going to be coming in here on Thursday going, it just doesn't sit right with me that Bill Haas did that. You're just not.
But am I missing
I could be some sort of a social justice warrior and take Bill Haas's case under my wing just to change that law.
What will we call that podcast? There has to be justice.
Tell you what, we should spend more time thinking about the headlines. Yeah. Now that we've put some effort into it, we're really hitting the spot.
Oh, dear. Right.
Obviously, the whole idea is meant to reward prolonged consistency. But, like, whether the guy starts at 10 under, 8 under, that's the key. It's these guys. You're talking about Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka's in the mix. Rory McIlroy's in the mix. These are the guys that have had a good, you know. So, like, it's unlikely that 4 straight 65s by Rory McIlroy is going to lose to a 67, 69, 66, and a 70 by Patrick Reed.
But surely it's just very straightforward that the Tour Championship was always seen as a season finale, one of the biggest tournaments of the season, that the player
Not
who
anymore.
Shoots the lowest score should win the tournament.
I hear what you're saying. I did hear Jeff Ogilvie talking about this new format, and the PGA Tour met with the players and they showed them the last decade of FedEx Cups.
Mm.
And they have worked out the current 10 under all the way down to level along lines that who actually comes out on top and who wins. It's very similar to what happens with the old system. The numbers kind of they correlate. So the way
you're in control. So unlike the situation where you can finish fifth in the Tour Championship and still somehow win the FedEx Cup, but it's out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
This way, the FedEx Cup winner will have to go and win it. They're in total control of whether or not they win the FedEx Cup.
No, I think he was almost saying, like, if you applied the new system to the previous 10 years, you'd have had the same FedEx winner.
Well, why change it?
I genuinely think it's because people, again, they're all in the hunt for casual golf fans. It's the reason they've moved it away from the football season. I think it's so, at the start, nerds like us are kind of used to the idea, well, look, if he finishes tied for fourth and Justin Rose finishes fifth and McIlroy doesn't finish better than tied third and Brooks doesn't do tied second and he's outright sixth, then he... Yeah. I think it's just a, like, right, we understand the FedEx thing is a bit naff all the way through the season. You know, you've got 1,000.567 points. It's just a, right, all that
we'll
FedEx
see.
Business is over. Now we can just turn this into a straight shootout tournament.
Mm.
Everyone understands
we'll
he's
see.
On 10 under and he's on 5 under.
I'll take your word for it.
We'll see. That's what you said.
And Nathan, said. Nathan, Tiger is never, ever going to shoot 464s this week.
Wow. So,
or ever.
They're at Medina this week. Woods needs to finish
11th. 11th.
Yeah. He's saying he's feeling much better. He withdrew from the Northern Trust last week, Liberty National. A mild oblique strain is what he said. He's played just 13 rounds since winning the Masters. So 11th are better needed at Medina, where obviously he won the USPGA twice, 99 against Sergio and 06. He says, been nice to take those days off. I've let everything calm down a bit. I've got a bunch of treatment. And I played the front nine today, played quite well, which was nice to see and nice to feel. I took the back nine off, did a bit chipping. So Woods is saying he's feeling pretty good.
This follows on from his comments after missing the cut at the Open, where he said he was looking forward to having a few days off and just getting away from golf, having not played for the previous 4 weeks and gone on holidays for 2 weeks.
The Masters took a lot out of him.
I understand that. Now he's after pulling out of the tournament last week and saying it was good to get a couple of days off.
Yeah.
How much time does this man need off? Like, more and more, and he'd make a fool of us again, I've no doubt, but
yeah,
the Masters feels like some sort of freak.
It does. No, it does.
No, well, the Masters followed on from the Tour Championship.
Mm.
You know, it was like a 6 month effort that has obviously taken a physical toll on him. And I don't know. I mean, look, I'm desperately trying to read some tea leaves here, but I saw a video that the PGA Tour posted of him arriving at Medina.
I saw that. Oh. The walk. Did we all see this?
That walk. It's like there's no movement in his hips. None. Zero.
It was
like he's walking like he's stiff. He's so stiff. Yeah. And
glutes not activated.
Know, nothing activated.
I mean,
the walk was dreadful from the car park. Yeah.
Yeah. There is a worrying. There is a massive question mark that since the Masters, he has effectively not been right at all.
Yeah.
And that's what, April, May, June, July. That's 4 months.
It's ominous. The Northern Trust didn't really do it for me. I think a lot of people, I tuned in on Sunday and I saw McIlroy three putt two greens in a row. One of them was just an unacceptably bad putt where he overhit the putt by about 15 feet. And Rich Beam helped him out by saying, well, look, that's just a loss of concentration. And then the next one was he missed from 7-8 feet. And then he looked at the blade, yeah. Like, it's not a wet day. There's nothing on the blade.
No. He pulled the putt. He pulled it. You could see him pulling it.
And that was I was just like, I'm not watching this. I kind of left it at that.
I thought Ram was great until he had the two bogeys in a row. But like, he's such an exciting player to watch. But then I must say, I thought Patrick Reed was terrific. He came in just... I have to say, I've enjoyed the last couple of weeks.
Have you?
Yeah.
I, for some reason, I've kind of not being able to get into it at all.
I enjoyed the week after, which we haven't actually covered.
Oh, Brooks and
the
Rory.
FedEx. Sorry, the St. Jude's Classic, the World Golf Championship.
Oh.
When Brooks showed
intimidated Rory off the park.
Massive kahunas and poor old Rory.
That must be psychologically damaging for Rory.
Rory looked psychologically damaged at the end of that round.
Yeah.
Obviously started with a one-shot lead, and whatever had happened that week, there were going to be questions about Rory as to if he'd won it. Well, how come he can do it this weekend? Obviously he'd had the press conference where he was very honest and admitted how nervous he was and all that sort of stuff. But it just felt in that final 6-7 holes that Koepka was inside his head.
Yeah.
And he was very aware of how this was going to look.
Totally.
That this was a, I haven't stepped up. Koepka, I don't think, played unbelievable golf on the final day.
No, he made it, by his standards, it was grand.
And Rory just got nothing.
Yeah.
Had nothing. And he looked on 18 shattered.
But he was the only player in the top 10 that day to not be under par.
That's right.
Like, that's just, you know, unacceptable.
Do you know the Saturday night press conference where, Nathan, where you said he was very honest, is, and from a human level, of course, I applaud that search for the inner truth. But from a sporting perspective, I just think it's so counterproductive and puts me in mind Jack Nicklaus, not necessarily a man given towards modern psychology or certainly not a student of the contemporary approach to psychology, famously said, oh, I've never three-putted a green in the final round of a major. And somebody in the audience went, oh, what about that time when you three-putted that green? And he went, I have never three-putted a green in the final round of a major. As a way of illustrating, he goes, whatever actually happened is irrelevant. This is my process. This is what I believe to be true. So on that Saturday night, by admitting that he is nervous and like he might as well have just conceded everything to Brooks. Now, and here's the thing. Sure, Brooks Koepka is playing well. Rory McIlroy has had the fourth best season since they started tracking that kind of thing in 2003. Like, why on earth would Rory concede nerves to Brooks Koepka? Why? Like, is Brooks Koepka much longer than him? Absolutely not. I mean, there's a couple of yards in the difference. So what is it? And that I think that's, as you say, Joe, I think that's really psychologically troubling for him.
Well, it's because he shot a 62 the day before, you know? So you can't have a better illustration of somebody who their game is in good shape. If you shoot that, you can't fake a 62. Not really, you know.
Yeah, but and as we all know, you can shoot a 62 and then go out and shoot a 70 the next day. It happens all the time.
Yeah, but I'm just making the point that I suspect if he had shot a 62 and was still tied for 20th going into the Sunday, he would have shot under par.
Absolutely, and Rory is keen to point out he's a student of the game and is more aware, I think, of the statistics than anybody.
Yeah,
and there's no way he's not looking at this and questioning massively why he can't perform under pressure from going up against Brooks Koepka, from going from shooting 62 effortlessly the day before to what happened at the Open, to that round in, was it Canada or was it at the Players where he was on for the 59?
Canada.
And on 16 when it was very much in the mix, hit a terrible shot, suddenly pressure's off, plays 17 brilliantly, goes on to 18 in Canada knowing actually still a chance and makes a mess of the last, and what, three puts the last, ends up at a 62. Yeah. And even that day, I think we spoke about it at the time, going, the second pressure was on. He was a totally different player.
Yeah. He said afterwards, by the way, if you're wondering, so he said he's having his best putting season ever. So it's not the putting, even though I look by random chance, I tune in to see those kind of horror moments. And sometimes, like, those missed puts count for a lot more than they just look on paper. You know, it's not just, oh, three-put, not that many three-puts. They're big moments in the tournament when the pressure's on. So they're not just stats either. I would disagree that they're just numbers. Some missed puts count for more than others. But he was saying his wedge play, he needs to tidy up. That's his issue at the moment. He was talking maybe about pushing some longer irons to the right and then tugging wedges, and he just needs to tidy that up, and he's on the right track and all that stuff. But
yeah, I'm sure he is.
Everyone's got issues. Everyone's managing quirks. I'm sure Koepka, if you said deep down to him, how's your game, he'd probably tell you two or three things that are not.
Well, Koepka, and again, last part, I think we questioned Koepka at the Open and at Pebble Beach, where his putting wasn't up to scratch, and how much work he had done in his putting in between to turn around after 2 days and go, well, I'm playing better than anybody, but I'm just not holding any putts. Well, have you put the practice in?
Yeah.
He got his putting coach, and I was trying to, I couldn't find anything about it afterwards. So his putting coach flew in to, where was this tournament on? St. Jude?
Yeah, Memphis.
Memphis, sorry. Yeah, in Memphis. So his putting coach flew in on the Monday to work on his putting after the Open. Now, maybe his putting coach was up in Portrush. I'm not sure, but I couldn't find anything to say he was. But you would have to question again Koepka if that is the case. How come after the Open you're getting your putting coach in and not beforehand?
Yeah, it's a fair point. Chatting to Peter Lawrie, he was just saying that he wondered, were the greens too slow for him? 10 on the stint meter from what he's used to year in, year out. But I don't know, he just didn't seem to adjust. He was playing with Bo Jackson in the
yesterday,
yeah. They had Bo Nose shoes for Bo Jackson and Brooks Nose shoes for Brooks. He was having a good time. He was enjoying it. I think he was enjoying, yeah, damn right, I should be playing with Bo Jackson. That's the level I'm at now.
Does he get to play with Michael Jordan?
Well, not quite yet. But, sorry, Finn, go on.
No, I just wanted to, just before we depart from Northern Trust, to kind of talk about the putting. Jordan Spieth finished reasonably well, hit the ball horribly off the tee.
Yeah.
Was all over the place. He had 21 putts,
which
is the best of his career, I think. And just like he's thereabouts. I mean, he's far from winning outright. He's far from dominating because his game isn't in the right shape. But, you know, when you've got 21 putts and that is reflective of a much improved putting season to the last, say, 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, counts for everything, I think.
Poulter was saying he was playing with him one of the days and that he beat Spieth on proximity to the hole 16 out of 18 holes, and Spieth beat him by a shot. And Poulter's not a bad putter.
No.
So that was kind of amazing. So it's Medina this week. Yeah, this is Bomber's Paradise. Massive greens as well because it's so long. Third longest course in the PGA Tour. There's a lot of dog legs. Every shot basically at Medina is a dog leg. And Rory even kind of conceded yesterday, like, the bigger boys will be able to go over these the whole time. It's tough for shorter hitters. So
bombs.
Bombs.
Is what Justin Thomas was saying.
Yeah, Phil Mickelson approved, I saw. Phil Mickelson did another fireside update with a picture of Tiger Woods.
Oh, I saw this and I meant to click on it. Good, it's bad, it's horrible.
Not, I mean, look, it's as good as it can be when he's talking to a photo of Tiger Woods. He's just talking about times he got the better of Tiger. That's what he's doing. Yeah, basically, yeah. In fairness,
I would love to see an actual Tiger Woods fireside chat.
We saw actually...
How giving would he be?
Tiger might do it. You saw Joe Lacava was brought in the Hall of Fame. Mm. Tiger turned up. I'd say Mark O'Meara's thinking, geez, why isn't this nice guy Tiger arrived in time for my night?
Yeah.
When you were like down the road in St. Andrews.
Is Phil in the Hall of Fame? Like, I know he will be in the Hall of Fame. Has he been, like...
I'm 90% sure he is.
Would Tiger induct Phil Mickelson into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I think he might now. I'm 90% sure Phil's already in. Yeah, I think he is. Anyway, can I just mention before we go, I don't know, did either of you watch the Women's British Open?
I didn't see the final round. I saw bits of it. Slow.
It was slow.
Oh my God.
We just said slow play is not an issue.
Oh, it is in women's golf.
Is it?
Oh, it's insanely
they don't
slow.
They don't
every
edit
time.
It sharply.
Is that it?
Because yes.
Even watching it on a Sunday night when any of the majors are on.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Slow.
Hurry the hell up.
Right.
Well, they don't edit as sharply. They don't cut from. They don't cut the action. They don't have the same production levels.
Okay.
I.
Hinako Shibono stole my heart across the 4 days. Just amazing, unbelievable story. If you missed this, this was like in my top five tournaments of the year at Woburn. 20 years old, she was going well all week, and then the front nine on the Sunday, which she hadn't played well all week, she was really struggling. She was well behind, and even having like started as leader and potentially thrown away an Open championship, she was just so pleasant.
Mm.
She was like high-fiving everyone. She was running to pick up her divots, smile on her face, high-fiving people, even though she's in the process of turning around, throwing away the tournament. And then she has 5 birdies on the back nine, shoots at 30. There was Lizette Salas, who was playing really well, and this was her big chance to win a major, and she thought she had won a major. But Shibono had a putt for birdie on 18, from, I'd say, about 18, 20 feet. And she absolutely rifled it. Right, like, I mean, she was making double bogey coming back and it went straight in the hole. And that
was
actually
won
the
Open.
It was just an amazing moment. And then they cut to Salas on the green where someone had to go over and tell her, you've played amazingly well today, but you haven't won. Asked how she'll celebrate, she told reporters, eat a lot of sweets. I like Japanese sweets made of squid or seaweed. And for her shot into 18, where she needed to make birdie on her second shot, she said, I was talking to the caddy over the second shot. I said to the caddy, if I were to shank this, it would be very embarrassing. Which is not textbook psychology. She says, now that I've won, I think a lot of Japanese people will know me, but in actuality, I just want to live a quiet life. So Shibuno was amazing at Woburn. That was really good. If you didn't see that, it was genuinely really good. So we might see more of her. Anything else anyone else wants to mention before we wrap up?
No.
No. Nothing.
No.
I was going to mention the Thorbjørn Olesen thing. I think people are familiar with the details there. Oh. He's going to appear before a magistrate's court. Yeah, that's the latest.
Ian Poulter's friend.
Yeah,
I love the way the head, the newspapers put Ian Poulter's friend. He's like, oh, geez.
Poulter's like, friends I was like these. Well, I had my eyes closed. I didn't see anything.
I saw that headline, Ian Poulter's late. Like, at least go at
Poulter was on the flight, though.
At least go at Ryder Cup star. People will kick in.
Well,
there.
Again, it's just the proof of where golf is. If Thorbjørn Olesen arrived into this office, would anyone recognise him?
We would.
We would.
Yeah.
Wouldn't Ian Poulter's going, I can't believe Tiger. Why didn't Tiger give me a lift in his private jet?
I'd say so. Police were waiting for the 5-time European Tour winner when his aircraft landed at Heathrow, taken into custody. Police have said a man has been charged in connection with an incident on an inbound flight to Heathrow. So he lives in Kensington, Chelsea, Olesen, and he's going to... Yeah, he's going to appear at Uxbridge Magistrates Court on Wednesday, 21st of August. There's not much more we can say about that. Fionn, who's your money on for the... What's it called?
Koepka.
BMW.
BMW, Koepka.
Medina. Brooks Koepka.
Yeah. Justin
Big
Thomas.
Big Bombers, of course. Hasn't had the year, has he?
Well, he's been waiting.
Lads.
Did I see odds of Tiger? He's like way out there.
Oh, I mean, if I gave you 25-1 on Tiger, what do you want to put on with me?
No, nothing.
Would you take 5-1 on him playing all four rounds?
I'd take that. Oh, he has to make the cut then.
No, there is
no cut. It's only 70 players.
Okay.
Yeah. But to finish in the top 30, I think, is what you're...
He has to finish 11th then.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I
mean, Tiger Woods is 40-1.
Yeah. Alrighty, we'll wrap up. Lads, we'll talk next week. Fionn, thanks a million. Nathan, thanks a million.
I really enjoyed the Bryson DeChambeau pod.
What was your Bryson? I have to...
DeChambeau.
You see, there will be a time for that.
Shambolic's such a good name.
You can go for that when he's, you know, got a 4-shot lead in the final round of a major and he blows up.
Well...
No, but that's DeChambeau.
Yeah! Oh, yes! Very good.
Blows up. It doesn't quite work.
DeChambeau. Oh my god.
It doesn't. What are other DeChambeau?
If he wins, it's DeChambeau.
No. This is bottom of the barrel stuff now.
Fionn, goodbye.
Thanks,
Nathan, goodbye.
Joe.
All right, we're done.
Starter kid right here.